is up. Welcome to a very special edition of Canucks Talk here. We are live from the Canucks Alumni Golf Classic at Northview Golf and Country Club in Surrey. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. Live from the mobile Kintec studio today here at Northview. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And I'm Jamie Dodd, not joined by my usual co-host. Instead, my guy, normally from the People Show and, of course, the post-game show on Canucks broadcast as well. Bick Nizar filling in. What's going on, man?
I'm pumped.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if it was Canucks Talk or People Show when the intro started. And I was like, all right.
You didn't know what we were doing?
It's Canucks Talk.
We probably should have done People Show. If we like talk about other things other than the Canucks,
that would be cool.
But whatever,
I'm hyped.
We're doing Canucks Talk.
I love a traveling show.
You called me at like 9:45, being like, "Am I doing the show with you today?
Are we pulling the curtain that far?"
You told me you set your alarm for 8 a.m., but you didn't know why. So you're just like wandering around your apartment. You're like, "What's going on?"
That's yeah. Usually, I just like wake up whenever the sun wakes me, and you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock, and then I set an alarm for
must
8.
Must be nice.
Yeah. And then set an alarm for 8 o'clock, completely unaware of what I'm doing. Looking at Brett.
Hey, you made it here.
Was looking at Brett Pesce contract comparables at 9:30, and I was like, you know what? There's a reason I'm up this early.
And it wasn't to do this. It wasn't to work on my spreadsheets. All right, so we are here, as I said, at the Canucks Alumni Golf Classic. And by the way, this year's Canucks Alumni Golf Classic marks 25 years of the event supporting charities across BC. More than $2 million raised in that time. And, you know, we do a bunch of Canucks Alumni events throughout the year. They're always really great. You see how much support there is from the community of alumni, how much they enjoy giving back, being part of it. And, I mean, $2 million raised in that time is incredible. So hopefully, you know, we're stationed here at Northview. We'll see who we can flag down, get, you know, rope into a conversation with us at some point throughout the course of the show. Maybe not Ian McIntyre. I don't know. We'll see.
I saw iMac. Shooting pretty well, I bet.
We'll see. iMac, Batch, or some actual Canucks alumni. We'll see if we can get. So we see if we can rope them into joining us here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So as always, text in your thoughts, your comments. Because we are now in the real, like, depths of the offseason now. You know what I mean? Like, last week, the season wraps up. Mm-hmm. We have the media availabilities. That gives us lots to chew on, right?
The morning period is over, is what you're saying?
The morning period is over. But also, like, the actual news period is over until something happens, which you never know, right, with this front office.
It was the weekend.
We might not have to wait very long for something to happen.
Yeah.
But we're really in that, okay, you're starting to brainstorm. You're working on your Brett Pesce contract comps, right? Yes. We had the Natchez discussion and the Kotkaniemi discussion on Friday, but you know, one thing I wanted to kind of zero in on, and this was kind of front of mind because, of course, the Canucks made the AHL head coaching hire with Manny Malhotra on Friday, replacing Jeremy Colliton. Since Patrick Helvin and Jim Rutherford have been with this organization, one of the most consistent themes through that time has been them talking about the need to have that pipeline of young talent coming up through the system, right? That constant churn of... It doesn't have to be. It's not about having, you know, the super high-end prospects who are going to come in and be 30-goal scorers right away. But just that pipeline of guys who can come in, who can step in and help your lineup, right? And it's one thing to really emphasize that when you're kind of a team that's trying to get back into the playoff picture, right? Maybe you've lost your way a little bit, and it's always so easy for fans to kind of latch on to, okay, play the kids, give them the opportunity. It's another thing when you won your division, right, had one of the most successful regular seasons in franchise history, won a playoff round, went to game 7 in round 2, that's asking a very different thing of potential of young players potentially coming into your lineup, right? And so we still hear that drumbeat of we need that talent coming up. We need that pipeline. And I thought it was kind of worth taking a step back and thinking, okay, what does that actually look like for this team next year? Like, what are the roles we're talking about? What are the players that can fill those roles? And how much improvement can you expect from those young players potentially coming into the lineup? And we saw, the obvious success case this year was Nils Höglund.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
Coming in, you know, after having gone down to the AHL in the previous season, coming in, scoring 24 goals, you can't ask for much more than that, right? does Nils Höglander have to take another step? Right? Is it about solidifying things for him? What, like, he's one of the guys at the top of the list. We can get into the other players later, but I think Hoaglander's in a really interesting spot because how much more production can you realistically count on him beyond 24 even strength goals?
But I think the way you phrase it there is really interesting of the layering of how much improvement you can expect throughout the course of a season. Because I think when we talk about, okay, this guy can play this role, and you craft an opening for September and training camp, even if you are harsh and say, I don't know if I want to make it for this guy, it's not necessarily about where he is in September. It's where he is in February.
Mm.
And
well,
and
as we saw, where he is in April and May.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, so, but for me, like, Nils Höglander is a great example because he started fourth line and he finished skating with Elias Pettersson. You can call that top line, you call that second line, wherever you want. But the growth period in between is instructive for players that we're talking about this season. So for the phrase I've used for someone like Vasily Podkolzin, I want you to start as Sam Lafferty, and I want you to finish as Dakota Joshua. Yeah. Right? So start on the third line, or the fourth line. Hopefully, by April, you've managed to show progress in your game that you're now on the third line. And you start crafting these spots for these guys, and that's, to me, where it is important to start building out what the future looks like. Because the reason I say this is, as much as there's a demand of, like, oh, put the next young guy in the lineup, the thing is, a lot of these guys are where they're at right now, are slated to be fourth-line players with chances to move up. The thing the Canucks have right now is bottom six players.
Mm.
So there's not a lot of space.
Well,
so it might be harsh on an Archie Baines or Atu Ratu, but like the space might not be there. And so I wouldn't get too discouraged from where you are in September, because it doesn't mean you can't graduate by the end of the season into a prominent roster spot and valued by the team.
And even Nils Höglander, you know, as you mentioned, he had that progression, but the team looked in a much better state when he was in that fourth-line role, right? Like, Nils Höglander had the kind of season where it's like, wow, we've got this guy who's capable of scoring like this at 5-on-5 in our bottom six. That's incredible. What a luxury to have. And then as, you know, guys go out, different things happen, the lineup gets juggled. As you say, he ends up playing next to Elias Pettersson, and that's not a spot you like him as much, right? And so it's that kind of balancing act. And I guess the question then for Nils Höglander specifically is, can he go from guy you really like having in your bottom six to guy you feel really good about having in your top six, right? Not just a, well, he's the only option we have, so we're going to put him there, but a guy that you are confident in putting in your top six, again, that you feel really good about. And, you know, we've already heard the emphasis from Patrick Elvin of, we need to go get more talent, right? We need to go get more speed up front and in the top six, more skill. I don't think Nils Höglander is going to be penciled in for a top six spot going into training camp, right? Like, that's going to be something he has to prove that he's earned over the summer.
I would put him in the young player category still, right? We're not talking about someone that's past it or something like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
we're
yeah.
talking about someone who's 23, going into his age 24 season.
Just had his most successful year in pro hockey.
He's just over 200 games, I think. So
yep, 220 games.
There you go. It's still in a young stage of his career. So if we're talking about young players, that to me was a telling thing out of Patrick Elvin's end of season. Unprovoked, he multiple times mentioned some young players,
yes.
right? So that's why we're having this discussion. For me, it's not just young players making it into the team, as we're talking about, like, the Baines and the Colsons. It's also someone like Nils Höglander. What
taking
role,
that next step.
Yeah, what role are you taking? And with the way the season ended, it's a great point to suggest that, like, he shouldn't have a penciled in You're penned in guy in the top six.
Yeah.
It's still, okay, where do you slot in right now? And if it is a bottom six role, that's why it makes it a little bit tougher for Oman, Podkolzin, Carlson, and Baines and Ratu as well.
And by the same token, though, as much as you don't want to just kind of gift him that spot, right? Like, there's such the emphasis on internal competition. And you know, for Höglander, it's the consistent scoring. It's also the defensive details, right? The play away from the puck that I think is important to earn that that type of role from the coaching staff. But having said that, you think about...
Honestly, just general playmaking, too, in the offensive zone.
That's fair.
Like, he does a lot of... Like, he really does the difficult stuff well. The rebounds and getting to the net front and winning pucks out of the corner. It's all the other stuff that's seemingly falls apart sometimes.
Yeah.
It's creating space for others, like that sort of stuff that I think can be a struggle at times.
But at the same time, if you're going to list this team's biggest needs going into the offseason, right? And as I said, I think, you know, we've heard from Patrick Alvin. I think anyone who watched the playoffs knows it's scoring punch in the top six. And you're to look at, and you're going to look at young players, you know, 23 and under, 24 and under in the system, who could potentially help address that problem. I mean, it's really only Nils Höglander, right? Next year, like unless you're so bullish on Lekkerimäki, and I don't think that's a realistic option. But you know, even as you said, Vasily Podkolzin, like you're hoping he's Sam Lafferty, right? Like Hoglander's the only like young, cost-controlled in-house option.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's going to do it, but that has a plausible case to be part of the top six solution, right? Like if he's your fourth winger and he's only making just over $1 million, right, and he has chemistry with Pettersson, you can picture that being a good solution. But outside of that,
your other five guys,
yeah, like you have to add your other five guys in a big way, and you're probably then using Connor Garland as kind of like super third line role, right, which you did this year as well. But outside of that, like if you're expecting scoring punch from this young group of players, like where's it coming from? You know, like I don't like Arshdeep Bains, really nice story, but seems more like a guy who's going to be, you know, similar position, right? Abbotsford star, maybe a call up here or there, but I don't think you can plug him into the lineup and ask him to be probably an everyday player, let alone a top six caliber guy for you next year.
And that's what we're talking about, right? On day one of training camp, you have an idea who the top 12 are.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're anywhere close to that stage right now. And so those players, it's very much this. Like, your summer is going to be huge. We'll use the term big summer all over again.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
I'd forgotten about that. Yeah. That was a Rutaka classic last year at this time.
But at the same time, it's still, I don't know if your management, you can go into the summer mapping out, be like, hey, we project four of these guys to have big summers. No, you build it out.
Yeah.
And if competition dictates that they stay in the AHL, that's what happens, because you've made improvements on the big roster.
Especially when you think about, you know, again, adjusting the goals for this team, right, and raising the standard. And that was one of our big takeaways on Canucks Talk last week from what Patrick Alvin had to say, right, when the line of it was only the second round, how important that was for the market and for, I think, the team to hear. And as he said, that was his message to the players. The goal is to get beyond that, right? So for if you're Arshdeep Bains, it has to be, okay, not just how am I going to make an NHL roster, but how am I going to contribute in April and May? And you start talking about bottom six positions and what are the things that players for really good teams, for teams that are in the conference finals, for teams that are in the Stanley Cup final, what are those things that the bottom six players can do? And I think that's a good point about Vasily Podkolzin. Like, because Sam Lafferty, you know, he scored a bunch of goals this year. I think you can question how much of that was kind of shooting percentage spike, how much was like underlying process. But I mean, doesn't kill penalties, right? You know, doesn't like not really consistently physical in the way you think he could be, given his frame, given his skating ability.
You would imagine like you generate a lot of force, right? But yeah.
So if you're Vasily Podkolzin, I think that's a good shout by you. Like, that's a role you can step into right away. You're not replacing an ace penalty killer, right? You're not replacing somebody who's really physically imposing their will on a game-to-game basis. But for this team to take the next step, okay, it's great that you can replace Sam Lafferty as Vasily Podkolzin, but we need you to be more than that, right? You know, by April or May, you better be a penalty killer or an incredible pest or an ace forechecker or something. Bring something additional to the table that they weren't getting in the bottom six this year.
I think it's massive that the organization has shown that they're willing to do it, too. Like, Höglander did graduate. And we moved him up the lineup.
Yep.
Guys came
from
the
NHL. He got his opportunities. And that was a guy, too, I think was so big. Like, he was in the NHL.
Yeah.
And they sent him down. And that can feel so devastating for players, right? Like a death knell almost. It was like, no. Go work. Go be the best player in Abbotsford. You'll get your opportunities. And they followed through on it.
And not just fourth line opportunities.
Yeah.
Real opportunities. Up the lineup. So now it's, I'll use Höglander as like the first guy, right? That's the example. Now every player has an example of, I mentioned, like it can be dispiriting to say, oh, I didn't make the lineup and all these things, not on the team, they don't like me.
Yep.
But they've shown that this isn't a death knell. This is, just go work, man. We have faith in what we do, and we are going to invest in you as a player, and you can do this within the same season. This is not, oh, yeah, well, we'll roll this next season. Because sometimes AHL, you get sent down there, and it's, you're forgotten about. But the way this team has done this over the last 18 months.
Well, and their track record going back to Pittsburgh.
That's
right?
The thing.
Like, so
Brian
it's
Rust,
not just the
Brian
18
Rust,
months.
Jake Gensel, yeah. Like all these guys. This is their MO.
Teddy Bluger.
all these guys.
You need someone to talk to about it? Like Teddy Bluger, if he's back, can tell the guys a lot about that. Like, he went 100%. Through that exact experience.
And so now if you're put Coles in, Baines, Oman, Ratu, Oman's probably a bad example because he feels like he's going to be a guy that's there. But to me, like those AHL fringe guys, that like Ratu especially, it's like you're probably just dying to get into the lineup.
Yeah.
But now they've shown, it's like it's not about September. Like, have a big summer. Keep working on the things we asked you to work about, but in 3 months, 4 months, you might be here in January.
Oman's an interesting name I wasn't even thinking about, but like, in terms of big summers, can he improve his faceoffs to be a fourth line center guy?
Those two guys, Nils Åman and Vasily Podkolzin. Mm-hmm. I know we're just talking about replacing Sam Lafferty and all those things. Nils Åman would be, to me, is a massive guy that could be someone else that steps into.
Like, they already the fact that they already trust him as a penalty killer and are willing to put him out there.
He's good at it, too. Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah, and so I think for him it's just there was always this hesitation to use him as a full-time center, I think, because of the face-off numbers. But that's a skill that improves. Mm-hmm. That's a skill that there's a long track record in the NHL of young players getting significantly better at face-offs. And I think he might be the player who has the most obvious, like, get to this number in the faceoff circle, and you can have a career as a fourth-line center penalty killer, right? Like, would you love to see more offensive flash? Yes. I don't know if it's ever going to be there from him. But can you just be an option that, hey, we're investing our money somewhere else, so we can't really spend on fourth-line? Like, sorry, Teddy Bluger, you're not coming back.
That's the name I was going to reference, right? I'm sure they would love Teddy Bluger back.
Yeah.
But if Teddy Bluger gets the David Kampf contract, you're going to be like, well, we have Nils Åman. Like, we'd rather just invest the time in Nils Åman than craft out $3 million in cap space.
And on the center conversation, because I think, we're talking about Hoglander, right? We're talking about Podkolzin. That next layer of young forwards in the system, Atu Ratu, Archdeep Baines, I should probably throw, like, Max Sasson in there as well.
Sure,
I know,
he
surprised some people in Abbotsford this year. And, Atu Ratu and Max Sasson, both centers. And we have a couple texts coming in, right?
Can I just rattle off these texts here? Yeah. Every text right now. Is coming in. If he needs to work on faceoff, send him to Abbotsford.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say, right? Like, Marcus and Gibson's looking forward to see what Mahotra can do with our young centers. Manny was one of the best draw guys for over a decade in the NHL. Somebody else, don't bring up any centers. They need some time with Manny. Manny knows faceoffs. Like, as soon as we talk about faceoffs, everyone's hyped
about
it.
There's so many texts about it.
Everyone's hyped about it. But I do think that's an interesting point. Like, I'm sure Atu Ratu, with his pedigree and, he's played in the NHL and all that, is probably, like, coming into camp thinking, I can be that guy. I can be there. But you're talking about big summer for guys. Like, I think this is a huge season for Atu Ratu. It's hard for me, unless he just absolutely, blows everyone away at training camp. It's hard for me to picture the scenario where he's breaking camp. But can he be a guy you call up in February? Can he be a guy that you call up in March after getting some of that time with Manny Malhotra, after just getting more time to season in the AHL? I think that's a lot more realistic for him, for someone like Max Sasson as well, than, okay, we're going to have a spot for you at training camp.
Ratu's still so young, too.
He really is. Like, is it 2021
so
draft?
Yeah.
So
he's still so
the
young.
The fact that it's – you kind of have to adjust your – expectations of him, because you look and he's like, well, he's in the NHL, he'll be back any day now, and it's like, he could be, but there's also a process he can go through, and again, it's about what role is he going to step in. Mm-hmm. Right, if this was a young team with no expectations, can you give Atu Ratu relatively sheltered kind of middle 6 minutes at center? If you were the Blackhawks or the Sharks, of course you would. You'd get him those reps. But what role is he going to help on a team that just won their division and their GM said he was disappointed with making it to the second round? Like, what's the role on that team? And I think that's the thing where he needs more time to develop.
He is the guy that screams to me. Again, I just mentioned, like, I feel like Podkolzin maybe wins that opening day spot because he can take over the Sam Lafferty role at the very least. Åman, it's a tougher projection because of center, but I feel like, 13th forward.
He has right now, and again, so many things can change, but he would have the inside track on, like, the 13th forward.
Yeah. Ratu just screams to me, opening day AHL, but I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. As I'm talking about this September to February growth period, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if he jumps Åman by February.
Yep.
And not even just 13th forward, it's like, you're in the lineup. That to me is, like, what makes a lot of sense, that Ratu just gets all these games, huge role, hopefully down the middle, works on faceoffs and all these things, because the upside is just higher. Right, we're talking about a player
so much higher.
At one point, he was discussed as a top 5, top 10 pick, and he slid, and his draft season was obviously as big, but that pedigree exists in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And if it gets brought out, you're looking at a fantastic player.
And I think there's more upside, but the Vasilipud Kolzin track from this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a little different because, again, Podkolzin had played so many more NHL games, right? But go down, you're going to figure in at some point. We're going to call you up. And Podkolzin, you saw flashes when he came up, but, you know, I think you would have liked to see a little bit more as well. So you hope that Ratu can take those next steps, but very similar, right? Go play a whole bunch of games, be a big part of the puzzle down in Abbotsford, and then you'll figure with the NHL level at some point. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep your thoughts coming in. Yeah, people are just fired up about having Manny Malhotra down there teaching faceoffs. Now, guys, he's got to do other stuff, too. The head coach can't be spending all of his time on the faceoff skills, but I'm sure he'll have some time to impart some wisdom in the dot to some of the young centers down in Abbotsford. So if we're talking about young players that could potentially step up, play a role, what role could they play? I mean, we should mention Artur Shilovs, right? Because I think everyone's pretty much in agreement. He's going to be the backup.
Are we counting Shilovs into this?
I mean, you got to. Same age as Hoglander and Podkolzin.
Honestly, I was just thinking at skaters.
That's fair. I mean, I was kind of doing that exercise as well.
Are people,
you may as well put him in.
Are people operating that Artur Shilovs won't be the backup?
No, that's what I'm saying. You've got to pencil him in.
Yeah, he's in. He's in.
He's going to be the backup.
I do think, though, a vet goalie.
I think a third goalie type is going to be signed.
Yes.
Right.
And I would like even argue that it should be an important one this summer.
Yeah.
Not that you have to like dedicate like $2 million, but just someone that's there with Tolopilo.
Yep.
And if worst case scenario happens, can come up and you can trust him in a game. Now, that's a very specific niche thing, and you might get priced out of the Scott Wedgwoods of the world, but That I think is kind of an important thing for the Canucks to prioritize.
No, you have to, like, I mean, goaltending depth was a huge strength for them this year. It paid off in a big way.
Yeah.
And I think,
but specifically,
you have to try. Yeah, sure.
Like I know that the carousel and the Ferris wheel of Ian Clark goalies absolutely works, and you can always rely on the next guy to some degree. But I would love just like a 26 or above year old goalie.
Yeah,
in Abbotsford.
A vet.
Yeah. Who's played NHL games.
100%.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like third goalie type of guy to come in and just shore up that depth, give you a little bit of Shilov's insurance. Like, you're going to go into the year with him as the backup. Mm-hmm. I mean, you ride him like that in the playoffs. Of course you are. But I think you have to be mindful about fleshing out the depth a little bit as well. All right. As mentioned, you can send your text in. We got lots of thoughts coming in about what the Canucks should do in the offseason. Should they look to trade this guy? Should they target this guy as a UFA? We can get into that all throughout the course of the show. We are live here at Northview Golf and Country Club from the Canucks Alumni Golf Classic, and we'll see if we can wrangle some alumni to come chat with us. But up next, Gemma Carson-Smith from the Canadian Press will join us on the phone here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Mike Halford
and Jason Brough.
Join us for Halford and Brough in the Morning weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. on Sportsnet 650.
Or on demand anytime through your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650, live from the Mobile Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. I don't know why you're giggling at me over there, Dom. It's called energy. Having some energy to open up a segment here.
You're shouting on a golf course.
Yeah, that's right. What? What is this? This is not Augusta on Sunday at the Masters, man.
Just picturing that Johnny Knoxville bit where he's in the bushes with the horn just on the golf course.
Instead of a hello, friends.
Everyone's just warming up right now, man. They're fine. Don't worry.
Jim Nance, warm welcoming in Augusta. Like, hello, friends.
There's no tee box near us. I'm not going to screw anyone up here.
Give us your best hello, friends.
I'm not going to do that right now.
Hello, friends!
Okay, settle down. Settle down. We are live from the Canucks Alumni Golf Classic at Northview. We're on the lookout for some alumni to join us here. Brendan Batchelor popped by. Too modest to come on the air with us, but he's out on the course today. All right, now joining us on the phone line, however, covering the Canucks and other sports for the Canadian Press, she is our pal Gemma Carson-Smith. Gemma, how are you today?
Hello, friends.
There we go.
That was good. Gemma, that was very good. I have to hand it to you. Well done. So we'll get into the Canucks here, Gemma, but I mean, I got to ask, how excited are you to be covering a 50 Cent concert in a couple of weeks at BC Place?
Oh, my gosh. The, like, first-year university student in me is so stoked. Like, that just takes me back to dorm room parties where, yeah, I don't have to get into it, but very excited.
I feel like they're just raising, like, this is 50 Cent, man. This is a big bet. The expectations are going to be huge every year now.
Okay, let's just look at, like, the last 3 years. One Republic, cool. Who was it last year? LL Cool J,
right? Yeah.
Awesome. 50 Cent! Bang. Yeah.
So
you
good.
Could say banging anymore? I don't know. But, like, what a way to get people hyped about this team in a year where they're hosting the Grey Cup. Like, I'm hyped. I think it's a great way to kick off the season. I really can't wait. And I think it's going to be an exciting season for the Lions on the field. And then I'm super excited to cover my first Grey Cup.
Plus someone you know that is going to actually show up at BC Place,
I was just going to say, at least someone's bringing stars to BC Place this summer.
Yeah, well,
Had to get our shot in there. All right, so we are still talking Canucks here on the show, Gemma. And, you know, we were just having the conversation in the last segment about young players, right? There's always been that emphasis from Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford, and you look at their track record in Pittsburgh about, you know, the young players stepping up and coming into the lineup, providing that next layer of talent. Looking ahead to next year, who do you see are kind of some of the key young players, whether they are already on the team or, you know, coming up through the system that could make a difference for the Canucks in the lineup next year?
Well, I think if the Silly Pod Colson doesn't pop next year, it's going to be a big problem. He's had a lot of chances. He spent most of the year down in Abbotsford and did some good things down there, but it's time for him to come up to the NHL club and make that Nils Höglander jump. Not saying that he needs to be a 24-goal scorer or anything like that, but they need to find a place for him, and he needs to put in the work to make a place for himself. He needs to put in the work to cement that role in the lineup. So I think he's the one that I will definitely be watching. I'm also excited about Archie Baines. I think that he showed some good things in some areas of that could use some constructive criticism when he was up with the big club this season. But I'm excited. Like, what a great story, first of all. But also, I think that he's got a lot that he could add to this lineup, especially looking at the guys that might be not here next season, right? Like, we can't get away from the fact that there's 9 UFAs on this team from this season, and they're just not going to be able to sign them all. So some of these guys from the baby Canucks, as I like to call them, they probably don't like that, are going to need to step up. And I think those are two guys who are prime for those roles.
The Podkolzin one is interesting, too, because you mentioned just pop. I've referenced, like, I just want him to come in and be able to take over Sam Lafferty's role, right? And, yes, Sam Lafferty scored some goals, but for me, it's just be a tenacious skater and then bring that physicality that Podkolzin have. So, you know, the pop element to me is, like, what can he prove through the course of the season? I don't know, just because he didn't score a goal and it was 2 points. I'm kind of concerned what the offensive upside is right now, but at the very least, to win a job in September and October, can you replicate what Sam Lafferty brings?
And that should be super doable, right? Like, he's a big body, and he has that physicality to his game. He showed up in Abbotsford a little bit, but he needs to be able to translate that to the big club. And yeah, I know that you're playing against big NHL guys, and in that role, you're probably going to get some matchups and whatnot, but like, that's what you're here for. So it's time. I think it's kind of, this is, I don't want to say last chance, because like, never, it's never a last chance, but it's time to show what he really can do and what he can be. You got to remember where this guy was drafted, and he's had so much promise, and we haven't seen much of that translate. I think that there is potential, but it's time for that potential to come through.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things where even when he was up in the NHL this year, you know, I thought it looked a lot better than the results ended up being, right? There were so many moments where you thought, like, oh, okay, that's really encouraging, but then just the bottom line wasn't there. And it's an interesting place for the Canucks because, of course, one of their biggest needs, as Patrick Alvin emphasized, as we've all kind of talked about, is scoring punch, right? Mm-hmm. Especially in the top six. And I'm not saying you're expecting Vasily Podkolzin to come in and play in your top six. Obviously not, right? You need a better solution than that. But, you know, whether it's Hoglander at least maintaining what he did this year, you know, Podkolzin, as you said, Konarsteep Baines, like, even if it's just down the lineup or depth scoring, you need more than just the flashes from these guys. There needs to be some consistent production at a certain point.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, if you can get a guy like Podkolzin into that Sam Lafferty role, then Podkolzin's cost controlled, so you can allocate some of that money elsewhere, right? You can allocate some of that money to scoring if you can trust Podkolzin to take that role. But that's the thing. You have to be able to trust him. You have to have that consistency, and that's what's been lacking in his game up until this point in his career. So it, I keep saying it, but now is the time.
Is Nils Höglander someone that we still classify as young and can still take a role? Because I think we tend to say, hey, if you're breaking into the team, start at the fourth line and work your way up. But he still strikes me as someone that's young. But I'm just not sure if the role he can win is something that is to the benefit of the club. Like, if he's good and proves he can be a top six player, sure. But right now, if it just feels more likely he's better suited in the bottom six role. And it's getting awfully crowded there, too.
Yeah, it is getting crowded, isn't it? And again, like, there's only so much money to go around, especially with the Oliver Ekman Larson buyout going up. Like, there's a salary cap for a reason, and there are only so many dollars. I think that obviously you'd love to see Höglander do exactly what he did this year in terms of having that offensive production, playing the way he did with Petey, all those things. But
all right, guys.
Again, are you going to get that consistency? I think that's so much of what this team is, the big question mark hanging over this team is, how much of last year is going to translate over, not only on a personal basis, like which of those guys are going to continue putting up big offensive numbers, which of those guys are going to continue putting out the same kind of performances that they did, but also what kind of consistency are you going to get throughout the lineup, throughout those the pairings that Target likes to put together? How many of those pairings are still going to be a thing once all of the signings and whatnot shakes out? So I think there's so many questions, but Alvin has said that he wants guys from Abbotsford to step up. I think that he obviously likes some of the guys who were a little less than dynamic this season to step up too. Like, we know that he said Mikheyev wasn't meant to be in a top six role. That was Alvin saying that was his bad. But he can't have another year like he did this year, right? Like, that was just bad. I've never seen a player so snake bit in my life. Every time he would get the puck and like look like he had a scoring opportunity, I'd just like sigh because you knew it wasn't going to come. He's making way too much money for that to be the case. Mm-hmm. So he's one of those guys who's going to need to step up. I think Höglander, it would be great to see him have another year. I think it'll depend a lot on what kind of situation he's put in. If he can stick in a top six role, great. But I hope that there is enough talent in this team come September that it's not a kind of... what's the word I'm looking for? It's not a given that he's going to be in the top six. I think I would like to see there be more competition than just Nils Höglander. Yeah, here you go. Here's your top six role.
Yeah, if you're looking to dramatically improve the top six come next year's playoff time, you got to have better options going into the season than just, you know, hoping Nils Höglander takes that next step, right? You'd love to have him further down the lineup. And of course, you know, part of that, as you've referenced, is a guy like Ilya Mikheyev as well. Is he still with the team? If he is, can you put him in a role that he's much better suited to? And, you know, you referenced Patrick Alvin in his commentary, right? Like, it wasn't Mikheyev's fault. He was a top six forward. It was my fault. And I thought it was also interesting just to hear him say, you know, it was really sad to watch Mikheyev lose confidence, to watch any player lose confidence like he clearly did. And just overall, you know, I thought from Patrick Alvin at that year-end media availability, kind of embracing that element of self-criticism, obviously really unsatisfied with the second round result. What did you take away most from hearing Patrick Alvin speak last week?
He was very honest, I thought. I always say that Patrick Alvin would be a great politician because he says a lot of words without actually saying much, but I didn't really feel like that last week. I felt like he had a lot to say and he was very honest. I thought it was so refreshing for him to say, we're not satisfied, we're not happy that we lost our last game of the season. It was only round two. For a season where they went in saying that everything had to go right in order to be a playoff team, like, if you told them at beginning of September that you're going to lose game seven in the final round to the team that was presumed to be Stanley Cup favorites, I think that they would have taken that in September. So it shows how much the team grew over the course of the season. That said, I think that expectations grew as well, and you could hear that in Alvin's comments. He believes this group has a lot more to give in terms of where they can finish, and it's refreshing to see. I thought, like I said, I thought he was really honest. The stuff he said about McCabe was just like kind of heartbreaking, because it just obviously isn't what they expected. Yeah. He was coming off of this big injury. He wasn't put in the right situation, all of these things. But that confluence of factors is going to happen for some player every season, right? Like, something's going to happen like that. And the player needs to be able to work around it. The team needs to be able to handle it a little better. And I think it was a learning experience for everyone.
You know, leading up to the trade deadline, we all kept referencing, hey, they'll pull one out of their, you know, like the rabbit out of the hat, just like they did with Hronek, right? Something that was totally out of left field. And coming up into this offseason, I still feel that way. And at the same time, we're trying to project something that we don't expect. If you were just trying to just think in your mind's eye of like, okay, what's something that would truly shock me this offseason by Patrick Alvin? Because they are, you know, ruthless and cutthroat and in theory, nothing would surprise me, but at the same time, if there was something unconventional 14, done 15, this offseason, what strikes you as something that it could be?
Ooh, something unconventional. Like, I'm going to preface this with, I do not think this will happen, but something super unconventional would be trade Demko. Trade Demko to get more
fans. Wow, yes.
And like I said, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think that he is beloved by this organization. This organization trusts him. This believes in him as the backbone of this team.
Yeah.
That said, that would be very unconventional. And crazy things happen. Like you said, Alvin and Rutherford are the traders, and they're always willing to shake things up.
There you go. Gemma Carson-Smith of the Canadian Press says the Canucks should trade Thatcher Demko.
Oh, my God.
You heard it here first.
Yeah,
Gemma, no, we're just joking, of course. We will not play that over and over again out of context. Gemma, thank you as always for doing this. Look forward to chatting again soon.
Have a great day, guys. Enjoy the golf.
That is Gemma Carson-Smith from the Canadian Press weighing in on the potentially shocking moments or things that the Canucks could do this offseason. And I mean, that is one of the great parts about this time of year, right? Is you can really just let your imagination run wild.
No, honestly,
like, you've heard we've started to hear some of the reporting, you know, linking them with the Hurricanes,
yeah.
But like, there's no avenue that is closed off yet.
So
you don't have to like, oh no, they're not going to do that. You can think of anything you want, basically, at this point.
Because they did the Hronek thing, it opens up every magnitude of adventure. And the place I was going, because you mentioned the Hurricanes, something that's unconventional. I was thinking about this a lot over the weekend. What if, like, there was an acquisition to go get?
I'm so excited right now.
they let's just say they went out and got Martin Natchez. Okay,
let's do it.
That's not unconventional. It's been talked about.
Yeah.
It's been discussed. But the unconventional thing about it is, standard practice would suggest trade for a guy, sign him to a long-term deal.
Trade for an RFA guy in that situation, it's because you want to invest long-term in him.
What if they just wanted to do the Philip Hronek thing all over again? Just, hey, you're 2 years. We have 2 years of club control on you.
Mm.
Let's go into the summer. Let's QO, ARB. Let's go through that process.
Now, is Natchez 2 years left or 1 year left before UFA?
I think it's two.
Okay, because that changes things a lot.
Oh, of course, of course.
Because Hronek's 1 year, right? Like, Hronek is an RFA, and then he has one more year left, and then he's a UFA.
No, but they got 2 years out of
right,
it.
Right. What I was saying.
What I'm saying.
I know, but I'm just saying if you're doing the Hronek for Natchez swap, you get that extra year of team control, is what you're saying, right?
Correct.
Yeah,
but I'm
just saying
when they acquired Hronek, they had 2 years of club control.
Yeah.
And Natchez, I believe, look, you can do a fact check on that on me, but I believe he has two more years of club control. So if they just say, like, look, if you want to go arbitration, we'll go to arbitration. We think you might only get 5.2,
mm-hmm.
and we can live in that reality. We get a top six goal scorer. And we'll just figure out the problem later. That, to me, would be unconventional. Because the typical thing is bring a guy in, sign him to term, and away you go. But if they feel that they got the hammer, that, hey, we have to go to the summer, that, to me, would strike me as unconventional. And if they're willing to put that out, then it's like any manner number of things could happen. Because I think his qualifying offer is 3.5. Mm-hmm. His arb case.
His arb case would be a lot better than that.
Yeah.
Not like astronomical necessarily, but if, you know, if they're, for a top six guy, totally reasonable.
If they're comfortable doing that, and they have proven at every step that they are comfortable doing unconventional things. Like, well, think how uncommon.
But their whole approach to building the team this year was maximum flexibility going forward.
Correct.
Right? Like, the longest deal they gave out was Carson Soucy at 3 years and, like, just over $3 million. Mm-hmm. Right? And everything else, like, Ian Cole, 1 year. Teddy Bluger, 1 year. Right? The Hronek deal, as you said, like, hey, we're going to acquire him, but we're not going to lock him up long term. We're going to see how it goes. It was all structured around, if this doesn't work, we can pivot in a hurry. Now, there's always two sides of that coin, right? Because it's like, hey, it did work, and now we got to pivot still. But why not take that approach again, right? Like, okay, you have your core players. And I do think it's been interesting. I've made this point on the show. So many people, I think, are attacking it as like, okay, they've got these nine UFAs. They've got so many free agents. What can they do to keep all of them? And it's, to me, that's not the right question to be asking, because it's not, you just don't want to bring the same team back. Mm-hmm. You want to get better, right? So I think it's not about like, okay, how can we jump through hoops to keep all of these guys, to keep this list of players who helped us get here? It's how do we use the flexibility of having all of these expiring contracts to go do unconventional things, go do bold things to make us get better? Because just even if you did, you know, grind everyone down and you found a taker for Ilya Mikheyev and you were able to sign all your UFAs, okay, like, are you better?
Yeah.
You're by definition, you're not better. So you almost have to think beyond just who are we bringing back and who can we get from outside the organization and how do we get them in?
I've said it 100 times. It might be the first tattoo I ever get, this phrase. Cap flexibility is more important than cap space, right? The space of the space is fantastic, but the flexibility, and finally, the Canucks have some liquid assets if they wanted to activate certain moves. And we're just talking about Temco. If it's like, if they wanted to, it's like, yeah, you could do it, but they have desirable assets for the first time in 8 years.
Well, how much has the conversation changed? Now, again, I don't think this is in the cards, but like, if you wanted to shop Brock Besser,
yeah,
the conversation has completely changed on his value versus 2 years ago.
Connor Garland.
I don't think they're the same name as Brock Besser, but still.
You would still understand, right? It's like, yeah, I could see teams talking themselves into Connor Garland.
I think there's teams out there that really like Connor Garland.
Yeah.
And now the cap goes up.
A year ago, you know, I don't know if
he's done it under Talk It and all that, right? Like,
So the fact that they have flexibility is more important than space. But to your point, it's not just to be like, oh, retain everyone just because we like these guys. And I talked about this the day after Game 7. It's such a fantastic story. And it brings you a warm, fuzzy feelings. The team is credible, fantastic. They energize the fans. And they were a very likable group. That's the other part. Like, it was a likable group that clearly worked hard and bought in. And at the same time, it's, Patrick Ovechkin said, it's the kid's second round.
Yeah.
Right? It's a great accomplishment.
We need to do better.
But if you want to get better, it's hard to project, like, how much more. You mentioned Nils Höglander, right? I think right off the top, you were saying, like, hey, 25 goals. How many more are you projecting for Nils Höglander?
Yeah.
Because
that's the other part of this, right? Is like, how many of your players, how many of the guys you think are going to be back on this team do you think are going to be individually better next year? You know what I mean? And like, are there things the team can do as a whole better? And, you know, another year of Rick Tocchet and maybe getting a little bit more, sure. But like, okay, I'd bet on Petey to be better year to year. Like, and beginning of year to end of year than he was this year. But can you really count on Quinn Hughes exceeding what he did this year? Can you count on JT Miller exceeding what he did this year? Can you count on, go down the list, Brock Besser, Connor Garland, Nils Höglander? I'm not saying they're all going to take huge steps back, but if you're looking for improvement, how much improvement can you get there? Like, they can all maintain, don't get me wrong. But that's well, again, you're still looking for the ways to improve.
The main guys, the production might not be the same. But the,
like, can the value be similar?
The minute-to-minute impact, I think, would be very similar.
But that's not improving. That's my point. You know what I mean? So if you're looking for internal improvement, and this ties into the young player conversation we were having, like, it's hard to find those sources. It almost, by definition, is going to have to be going. I mean, Ilya Mikheyev, I guess, if he's here, right, you would expect some internal improvement. But in big-ticket things, right, like, okay, where is this coming from if you don't go out and get those guys. Somebody texted in on the Natchez thing, Keith the Water Guy. Waddell isn't with Carolina anymore. They aren't trading with them. I mean, Don Waddell, from all accounts, was the front man more than the mastermind behind player activity there in Carolina. Well, it's true.
I think that paints a harsher reality, but...
But I don't, like, my point is I don't think anyone should expect a big, like, organizational shift in philosophy because Don Waddell left Carolina.
Yes.
He was not the driving force behind the philosophy.
Why can you say that the first time?
I'm right!
No, it's just like...
Why are you booing me? I'm right.
Collaborative effort, but I don't think it changes the scope of the...
No, I don't, and I think, like, the reporting
by the way, the Don Waddell leaving was not like, wow, it's such a surprise.
That's what I mean. The reporting came out when everyone was factoring in him leaving anyways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, I don't think it's like, oh my gosh, everything's changed in Carolina.
The entire hockey world knew he was coming to an end with his contract.
Mike, the urologist from Broxville, Sexton, we always want to bring these guys back because we know them, but I want management to find players I wouldn't even think of to be a better player or on a more efficient contract to make the team as a whole better. Yeah, it's tough. You can't afford to have a ton of loyalty, especially to the non-star players that we're talking about here. Now, I will say, it doesn't necessarily have to be, like, obscure diamond in the rough types. You'd love to find some of those, you know.
Let me tell you about Eric
Dakota
Robinson.
Joshua. Sure. But, like, Jake Guentzel, that's, you know what I mean? It's like,
no, of course.
It doesn't
yeah.
have to be obscure. Like, yeah. you go land Jake Guentzel, that's a big deal. Martin Natchez falls into that category, a lesser caliber,
Jake
obviously,
DeBrusque.
Than Guentzel. Yeah, Jake DeBrusque, like Brett Pesce, as you said, you're mapping out Brett Pesce comps. So there are big names out there, but I agree with the overall idea, right?
6.7 by 6, by the way. I don't know if people were asking.
Interesting.
I just threw that out there. That's what I came out to. I don't know what the general consensus is.
I think something around there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
6.5.
I know there was the...
33
the
million.
I forget what the name of the place does the UFA projections, but they all felt low to me this year.
AFP analytics?
Yeah. The RFA ones are always bang on. The UFA ones felt pretty low, generally. We went through the exercise on the show. Last week, and just kind of, it was like a lot of them where it's like, no, they're definitely going to, that guy's definitely going to get more
than what
they're projected for.
Yeah, there was one for like Lindholm.
Lindholm felt in the neighborhood. What was Lindholm's?
6.7 times 5.
Oh, no, he's making more than that.
Yeah, right?
He's definitely making more than that.
Just caves immediately. Yeah, he's making
for
more
some
than
reason,
that.
I thought his was higher than that.
No. This was from Daily Faceoff last week,
and
Frank putting it out with, I think it was AFP Analytics. But look, some sites do it differently, and that's why I like to do my spreadsheets.
Of course you do. Gotta do your own.
Yeah.
Gotta have the in-house proprietary Bick Nizar spreadsheet. Bick Nizar model.
By the way, I came out to 7.6 over 7 for Lindholm.
All right. Okay, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep those thoughts coming in. We will talk about the conference finals going on and some of the other news around the NHL. Sean Gentile from The Athletic joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.